Welcome to the Chase MedSearch Podcast, the place where we dive deep into the medical device sales industry by discussing the current trends, timeless philosophies, and amazing experiences that shape our niche of the industry. Join me, Jordan Chase, on a guided tour as I speak with established sales leaders and professionals as they share stories that will help you get in, stay in, and thrive in your medical device sales career. Let's start the show. Welcome back to the Chase MedSearch Podcast. Super excited to be back with you in this episode. There is a very good friend of mine that we are having on today as a guest. He's not just a friend of mine, he's an extraordinary performer in the pain neuromodulation world and back in the day in the movement disorders neuromodulation world as well. Marcus Reed is my guest, and he really needs no introduction. It's no exaggeration to say that Marcus and his Houston Pain District was an absolute cornerstone of the Medtronic Neuromodulation Pain franchise for well over a decade. Year in and year out, Marcus and his team delivered extraordinary sales performance, growing the business an astounding 45% in revenue. He also managed two pain districts at one point, and was tasked with running over $40 million in revenue at that point in his career. He's won all the accolades, District of the Year, President's Club winner, Manager of the Year multiple times. He was named to the Neuro Management Advisory Council. He's been country manager for Puerto Rico, and he finished out his remarkable 30-year career at Medtronic as senior manager for the Sales Performance Academy. He's had quite a career. And it's awesome to have him on my podcast today, which took some doing because as accomplished as Marcus is, he's also an incredibly humble individual. Marcus, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jordan. And appreciate all the nice things you just said. I actually forgot about some of them.
Yep, I'm sure you actually did. They're all true. So yeah, they're nice things to say, but somebody had to go out and get all that stuff done. And I'm sure your shelf at home breaks every now and then from the hardware you got stacked up there. You're a fun guy too. I got to say that, you know, I have known so many people that worked with you and worked for you. And in fact, I've had so many suggestions to rope you into this podcast. It's just great to have you on today.
Well, I appreciate it, Jordan. It's an honor to be here. It really is.
Yeah. Well, you had a great career. So let's talk about it a little bit. But first, how's retirement? What are you doing these days? You're recently retired.
Yeah, recently retired as of 2 months. It's interesting. You think retirement and you think you're just not doing much of anything. But it's funny how busy your days get. But yeah. As far as work, I'm in a work transition phase because I'm looking at doing some consulting work.
Yeah.
And there's two areas that I've been working on. One, before I left Medtronic, I was helping a friend of mine in Grayson County near in Gainesville, Texas. Mm-hmm. And he's a probation officer. And actually, I started talking to him about, hey, give me some details about what your job's like and who you're working with. And he started telling me about the people that he's working with, the people that are on probation. And I asked him a particular question. I said, okay, I hear what they've done wrong, but what are you guys doing to help them, to show them what they do right instead of what they do wrong? He says, we don't have any programs like that. We have nothing. I said, well, I think I've got something for you. He goes, you know what? We don't have the money. I said, that's okay. How about pro bono? And and see what you think. And I was thinking about doing a Street Finder assessment and workshop for him. When I offered it up, he said, well, look, I got to talk to the judge. I got to talk to the district attorney. It's okay. So I thought he was going to talk to him. And next thing I know, I'm on a Zoom call with everybody, explaining what Street Finders are all about and asking them if it's something that they think they'd be interested in doing for these people that are on probation that they had. They had like 15 at the time. And so they brought in 15 people, ages 18 to around 28. And I did a program for them. And since then, I've done some emotional intelligence assessments for some of the people in the class. I've done some other assessments and kind of helped them look at how their personality might match up to certain jobs. And that's a Berkman assessment. Actually, I used to do that at Medtronic with the team.
Yeah.
And so I've just taken a lot of the things that I've learned from Medtronic and was able to do at Medtronic especially the last 5 years in the Sales Performance Academy. And I just positioned it or pivoted and put it in a situation where I could help people away from Medtronic. And so from that, the district attorney has now gotten calls from other district attorneys that they were like, hey, we'd like to talk to this guy and see maybe if he could come over and take a look at some of the people that we have on probation. So that's just one area where I have the opportunity to actually go in and work with other folks outside of the medical device industry. Hmm. And then the second piece is I'm actually, it's funny, I'm doing this podcast because I'm actually have been writing a couple of scenarios that I could use maybe for a podcast later on. And really it's around management scenarios and working with middle managers and hopefully do a better job at managing and growing their people and their talent and their business. So those are a couple of things. They're very different directions, but things that I'm interested in continuing to try to focus on and hopefully be able to help people out with.
That's fantastic, Marcus. Just absolutely fantastic. I knew you would be busy doing something rather than just watching the ocean in that beautiful Galveston home you have, but that exceeds even what I thought you would be doing. That's just terrific, man. Congratulations and kudos on making a difference and giving back.
Thank you. That's great.
Let's start with your origin story here. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
So, born and raised in Tishomingo, Oklahoma, which is about an hour and a half from Oklahoma City and probably about 2 hours from Dallas.
Okay.
So, it's in the southern part of Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. What'd your parents do?
So, my father was a professor at a small college called Murray State College in Tishomingo, and then later transitioned and became a principal at the middle school where we went to school, my brothers and I. And so he ended his career as a principal.
Interesting.
And then my mother was a Spanish and French teacher at the high school that we went to.
That's great. So you come from a family of educators.
I come from a family of educators. And I guess, you know, what's interesting, or maybe kind of full circle, if you look at what I did the last 5 years, was really, I was a facilitator, but I was actually teaching and coaching.
Yeah.
And what I'm doing with the people on probation, teaching. And so it's interesting. It was not the direction I was thinking about going ever when I went to college. I didn't think about being a teacher or anything like that. But it's funny how I guess maybe that's part of my roots. And that's what I'm doing now.
Yeah, that is full circle. How'd you get into sales? Was it something you knew as a young person that's what you wanted to do with your career, or did you try a few different things and then kind of gravitate toward that?
So I graduated in 85. And so in 85, when I left Oklahoma State, I had an international business degree. And I thought that I would, because I'd gone to school in Mexico for a while, my Spanish was pretty good. So I thought, you know what, I could be a manager someplace and maybe in Mexico or something like that, because that would be international to me. And I quickly realized that companies weren't hiring people out of college that had no experience, and especially no experience in managing. So I was fortunate enough to run into a recruiter in Dallas who made a suggestion and said, young man, nobody's really going to hire you to manage anybody because you don't have any experience doing this. So what I would do is I think you should go into sales. Now, when he told me that, the first thing I said was, no. I said, salespeople are not good people. They try to tell you things and it puts you in positions where you can't say no. And I just don't feel good doing that. And he started laughing. He goes, I don't know who you've been around, but that's not sales.
Right.
And sales is a very noble profession. And it's something that brings value if you do it right. And I said, well, okay, let's try it. And so when I left school, sales was not in the picture. And after I got out of school and realized I had to get a job, 2 months after graduating, I still didn't have a job, then sales was very much in the picture. Mm-hmm. And so my first job was with Kraft Foods. And they were based in Dallas, but they moved me to Paris, Texas, because I said I would move anywhere. And they said, well, go to Paris? I'm like, you're giving me the job, I'll go to Paris. So I moved to Paris, Texas, with Kraft Foods. And I tell people, I said, selling Miracle Whip and Velveeta cheese.
Huh.
That was my job.
But I bet they trained you well. What was the training like at Kraft?
You know, we did have, I do remember going through some 2 to 3 day training and presentation type skills. Mm-hmm. And so product knowledge, they talk to us about the products and you know, the value that Kraft, the organization brought to the customer and you know, how they backed up their product. If their product ever expired, they would fully refund the store. Nice. So yeah, they trained us in a lot of interesting things, but I don't really remember. I guess from a training perspective, I remember the presentation skills, and I do remember some sales training role playing, mm-hmm. and then that was about it.
Then it was
back in the field. Where I probably got the best training was with my manager.
Okay. What'd they do?
He was an elderly gentleman who'd been with Kraft for a long time, and he was a very experienced person. And one lesson I will never forget, and I still remember it today, and I used it a couple of times with some of the reps at Medtronic. But I remember going to a store with him, and we just started working together. And he said, go to the store manager and sell him a display. Like if when you walk into a grocery store, you might see a display of Coke or you might see a display of Velveeta cheese stacked up. And so those are displays and that's where you could actually sell more product because they were already buying Kraft products, but this is a way to sell more. Mm-hmm. And so I went over there and I fumbled around and said something and he said, no, I don't need anything like that right now. And when I came back, I remember I was like, embarrassed because I didn't get the sale and I was kind of dejected. And he looked at me and he said this, he goes, are you bleeding? Bleeding? What are you? So I looked at my hands. I'm like, did I cut myself or something? I looked back up. I said, no, I'm not bleeding. He goes, well, you're not bleeding. Then you're okay. Come on, let's go. We got another store to go to. And at that point I realized, wow, I made a big deal out of nothing. They're going to say no sometimes. They're not going to always accept what I bring to them. But it's not a big deal. I'm not bleeding. So right. I'm actually pretty good. So let's keep going. And from there on, I think that's when sales started to turn into something fun and exciting.
That's great. I mean, powerful life lesson right there. And one you obviously incorporated down the road and still have with you. How'd you gravitate toward medical? How did you begin to hear about medical device sales? Why was that a direction you wanted to take your career?
Yeah, it's when you hear what I'm going to tell you, it's not going to be a lot different than what you and I would hear. How did you get into medical? And it was, I researched and I did this and I did that. And I followed these companies and I knew people who worked there. Hmm. And so I wish I could say that. I was living in Paris, Texas, working for Kraft Foods. And the same recruiter called and said, I think it's time for you to move to a bigger stage. And I said, I think it is time. And so before long, he had got me in front of Johnson & Johnson. And there was they called it an area manager role, but really it was just a product specialist. Mm-hmm. And they had two jobs, one in Dallas and one in Houston. And the one in Dallas was actually a sales rep role, which I thought would be best for me. But I didn't get the job. I got the area manager job in Houston. And it was selling a new product for one of the divisions called Criticon, which is no longer with Johnson & Johnson today, but it was selling an IV pump. And it was a new pump device that they had bought. And the lady wanted me to be her area manager. And so I moved from Paris, Texas to Houston, Texas. And that's how I got into medical sales. I did no research. I had no clue what I was getting into. When I finally got there and realized, I was like, oh, nobody wanted to take this job because it's a hard product
sometimes.
It's a hard product to sell. But it ended up being a very good experience for me. And I got some really good training on the job training. And I think that experience is what led to help me get into Medtronic.
Interesting. Yeah, J&J and I'm sure it's still this way today, was a difficult company to get hired into. What was the hiring process like? Was it strenuous?
Oh my gosh, you hit the nail on the head. I bet I interviewed probably 6 or 7 times. And I even remember one interview with the manager's name was Jack Erickson. And he ended up being a mentor of mine later on. And Jack had me come over on a Saturday, Jordan, on a Saturday, to his house. I was dressed in a suit and tie. Jack was in a pair of swim shorts, and he was tanning by his pool. And so I sat out by the pool in a suit and tie while he was tanning, and he was asking me questions.
Huh.
And that was, I think, the last interview before the final.
Wow. A little unorthodox, but I guess it cares to see how bad you wanted that job.
You know, as I was walking out, I was like, I better get this job. I just 45 minutes sweating in that hot sun.
Yeah.
This is a very interesting interview.
That's great. So you were at Criticon, obviously doing well. And then somewhere another, Medtronic got on your radar screen. Was that the same recruiter that called you, or was it, how'd you hear about them?
So when I was in Houston, and that division that I was in, they finally sold it and they moved me to San Antonio. And so I was in San Antonio for a year as a, not as an area manager anymore, but just as a sales rep. And halfway through the year, I got a call from a recruiter, and it was for an interview with Medtronic, but this was the valve division. And so I go to do the interview, and I remember in the interview process, they said, you know what, we are probably number 2 or maybe number 3 in the market, and we have a lot of hurdles we have to overcome, and there's a lot of things that we need from the representative, that can you do this, can you do that? And I spent 4 years with Johnson & Johnson, where our product was like number 10 out of 10, right. And I'm like, right now I'm with the number 1 product. I sell Gelco IV catheters and Dynamed blood pressure monitors are the number 1 product on the market. I have no desire to sell the number 3 product on the market again. So I actually ended the interview. I said, you know what? I appreciate your time, but I'm not interested. Thank you very much. And so I left. 6 months later, I got a call from a different recruiter. I said, hey, there's an opening at Medtronic and they'd like to talk to you. And I said, I know this is being recorded, but it's kind of interesting. I said, I'm not interested.
Right.
I said, what? I said, no, I'm not interested. I've interviewed with Medtronic and I'm just not interested. They're like the number 3 player in the industry. And the lady's like, wait, what division did you interview? And I was like, well, I didn't know there was that many divisions. I thought there was just one, like the cardiac division. She's like, no, there's multiple. And I'm like, oh. And she's like, I said, well, I just don't think Medtronic is a good fit for me. And she says, I think that maybe you should go to the interview and at least try and see what you think about this division. And she was very persuasive.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't let it go that I didn't really want to interview with Medtronic. And I said, okay, I tell you what, when is it? She goes, tomorrow. I said, okay, I'll go. So I go to the interview. I still didn't know anything about the neuromodulation business or anything of that type of business that Medtronic had. I just thought it was pacemakers and I wasn't really interested. And I meet Mike Norris and we go through the interview. And I remember halfway through the interview that a physician called, and I was listening how Mike was talking to the physician. And it was not like a rep talking to a doctor or a customer. It was like a business partner talking to another business partner. I thought to myself, oh my gosh, this is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
So when he got off the phone and we kind of wrapped up the interview, I looked at him and I said, I think this is a job for me. And I said, I'll tell you what, I'll get on a plane with you right now and let's go to Minneapolis and let's just seal this deal. He started laughing. I said, I'm serious.
Yeah.
And he goes, there's a few more interviews that you need to go through, but you've done good. We'll see how you do on the next one. I said, just let me know when you want to get on that plane. And I left. And when I got home, I told my wife, Nancy, I said, I'm glad I went because I found the job that's just right for me.
Yeah. And,
you know, four interviews later, I was hired.
So you got in, and you didn't just get in, you got in with both feet, and things took off for you at a rate and a pace that I think a lot of people would love to emulate. You got in pain, you won Rookie of the Year, then you eventually got promoted to Senior Sales Rep, which I'm going to tie back to that because that was a hard award to get. You won President's Club, you got promoted to Regional Trainer. For folks that want to have that kind of success in the pain world, and there's more pain companies out there now than there used to be, for sure. What advice do you have for folks that get into this space? What does it take to be successful and have that level of success, which is not ordinary?
I first would tell people they have to be patient once you get into this space. And I think I would say the same thing if it was a cardiac space or when you're working with devices and implants and with patients, there's a lot more than just the training that you're going to receive from the company and the modules you go through and the readings and the role plays and all that. That's part of it. The bigger part is experience. And experience comes with time. And the representative has to be patient because we learn at different paces and we gain experiences from what we see on a day-to-day basis. And the reason I say that is because when I was in the space, we weren't doing a lot of implants in the San Antonio, Waco, Austin, the Valley area. So I had to build it. And so I wasn't getting the experience that say Price Cleaver was over in Houston, he was probably doing three times the implants that I was doing. So he was getting a lot more surgical clinical experience than I was. And I remember I was probably 8 months into this role. And another thing I think it helps that your manager needs to be actively involved with you, not on every day, but they need to be there to kind of check and see how you're progressing and be able to listen to you because there's things that you're not understanding or you're not, it's just because of experience, you're just not where you think you should be. And so it's very helpful to have a manager to be able to tell you, I don't expect you to be there right now, but you will get there. And those are things that were very powerful. But what probably helped me the most was 8 months into this, Brian Horan was in a training program for manager training, and he came and worked with me. And Brian was a really good rep, and he had a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience. And so I was really excited to have him come work with me so he could tell me what I needed to do. And at the end of the day, I got my pencil and paper out, and I was ready to listen to all these great pearls that Brian was going to tell me. And I said, okay, now that you're gonna write all this up about our day and how it went, what you saw, tell me what I can do better. And he said, you know, Marcus, you've got everything it takes to be great here at Medtronic. The only thing is time. You just need a little bit more experience, and that's going to happen in the next couple of months. Don't push it. It'll happen. But everything what you need to do well, you're doing it. You're doing it. Just keep it up. And when the experience catches up with you, you'll see. And about probably 6 to 8 months later, I understood what he's talking about. And then from there, it took off. And it's funny, Jordan, when I started managing, I remember leaders would come and say, all right, we're going to put them through your new hire program. And that would usually take a couple of weeks. And then they go out in the field and they see cases. I say it's 3 months. And so after 3 months, some leaders were expecting the representatives to automatically contribute.
Right.
And I would tell them, so don't expect that out of mine. Mine are going to do that. And then they're going to go and they're going to be CSs, or they're going to be basically like clinicians for the next year. Mm-hmm. It was like, we don't have that much time. I said, you can't afford not to. If we do not get them clinically, surgically trained, this is the foundation of our business. Nobody's going to buy from them because they won't believe them. And they know they don't have the experience when they're talking to them. Mm-hmm. And they're not gonna be able to sell the product because they won't know all the benefits to the patient and the physician and the facility. And the only way they're gonna learn that is through spending time in the facility doing cases, all types of cases, not just the simple basic cases, implants, but revisions, everything.
Right.
And so I refer it to the wax on, wax off theory. It's the same thing. And if you want to be good in this space, first you need your manager to support this, but you need to spend at least 8 months. Some people will learn faster, but some people will take a little longer, maybe a year, and a couple of months, but really spend time focused clinically and surgically in the operating room, outside the operating room, working with patients, working with the physician, seeing patients, all those kind of things. At that time, after you gain that experience, then it'll come so easy. You'll start, instead of selling, you'll have conversations like, how can this help your patient? How can this make it better for you and your office staff? How can these products make a difference for these patients that have these indications? Then you're looking at being more of like a consultant instead of, hey, let me tell you the feature and benefit of this and right. the feature and benefit of that without even knowing if it met anybody's needs. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is where most companies and even Medtronic are failing because they expect a lot from the representative and they just don't have the experience.
Right.
And representatives get frustrated. And they start failing and they start making mistakes and they can make big mistakes. Yep. And guess what? The big mistake comes to the hands of a patient. And that's the one that you don't want to have happen to.
Right.
So that's probably the advice I would give a company or a manager that if they were hiring and putting a person through a neuromodulation program, you need to make sure you have the time set aside for them to learn. Because if they get through that first year and they get that foundational year underneath them and they feel good and they understand what they're doing, the rest of their time here is going to be, they're going to be off and running.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be like they have weights on in the second year, in the third year, and it's just a struggle.
And it sounds like you had a supportive manager that was on board with that. Is that kind of how you were brought up in this business?
I think Mike Norris, when he the way he taught me, his first thing he taught me was, he said, this is your business. So I want you to think of it as your own personal business. And I'm here to oversee it. And when things are going well, I'm let you know. And I want you to keep doing what you're doing. And I'll say, hey, I'm going to reinforce that. If things aren't going well, then we're going to sit down and talk about how we can turn this business around and make sure it's going in the right direction. But I want you to understand you have full ownership. And that was the key word. You have full ownership. So that meant this was mine. So how do you want to treat it? Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the representative's pride comes in. I think that's where the representative says, you know what? I want to be the best because I want to make sure my business that's helping these people, the doctors and the patients, I want that brand to be the best in San Antonio.
Right.
And I think when you take on that kind of ownership, things change. You see it through a different lens.
Great point. It's a great point. You're heavily invested personally, emotionally,
correct,
invested in the business and treating it like it's yours, mm-hmm, making decisions as if you were a business owner.
One of the things that I did, and I recommended this when I became a manager, was when you're in a business like this, taking care of patients, it's not a 8 to 5. And guess what? I come home, I turn off the car, I go in the house and my phone is turned off and all that. It's not like that.
Right.
It's a different ball game. And so when I knew this, the first thing I did is I went to Nancy and I said, this first year, you're going to have to give me the benefit of the doubt because I'm going to be gone and I'll be doing things late at night and early in the morning. And so I won't be around as much. I'm going to try to be here as much as I can, but let's just set the stage now.
Right.
So that you understand, but once I get through this first year, we'll be back to normal again. And I did that 3 times in my career. And it was when I became a rep in San Antonio, the beginning of my pain career. Then later on, I became a DBS rep, and it didn't take me a year, but it was about 6 months, 6 to 8 months of same thing. I was gone a lot, training, cases, all those things. And then my first year as a manager, and I told her on those three occasions, you got to give me some time because I might not be here as much. And I think it's important that you include the family, you include the spouse, and let them know what's going on. Because once that, and the year goes by fast, but once the year's over, things settle down. You get back, you're now in the groove.
Yeah.
And I think it makes it better for you professionally and personally.
That's wise. That's so wise. Those conversations have to be had. Mm-hmm. You notice when they haven't been.
Oh, I don't like to manage people when they haven't been. So.
Why don't you go into movement disorders? You were just really at the top of your game in the pain world. And then you, like you said, you became a deep brain stimulation rep and you were selling the spasticity pump as well. Mm-hmm. Why did you go into that? Why was that a good move for you at that point in time?
So two reasons. Actually, I'll give you a third that happened, but it was out of accident. But the first two reasons was I was at the top of my game. I enjoyed the pain business. When DBS first came out, they were only using one lead in one side of the brain because the neurologists and the neurosurgeons didn't feel like two leads would be effective and probably cause some damage. And it was also very new, and a lot of people were scared of the therapy. I talked to John McDonald, and I had worked with him a couple of times. We just happened to be in Corpus Christi at the same time, so we made some joint calls, and we worked together. And I saw a patient that he programmed, and it was amazing. I thought what we were doing was amazing and helping people with chronic pain. And when we turn the stimulator on, the pain would go away. If we put a pump in and the pain would be gone, I thought that was amazing. But when I saw this gentleman in a wheelchair, and after a few minutes of John programming him, and then John helped him get up out of the wheelchair and asked him to walk, and he started walking. He didn't was shaking, he was walking. Mm. And then I saw the tears in the eyes of his wife. And that's when I said, that's where I want to go. What was interesting at the time, though, I had a lot of people from the pain organization who would come to me and say, you don't want that job. The neurologists are very difficult to work with. They're hard to convince. And those are the ones that have the patients. They're probably as hard to work with as an oncologist. And oncology doctors can be very difficult to sell to. But there's a reason for that. But they can be. And when they said that to me, all that did was fuel my desire, because if they're the most difficult, that you guys think these are the most difficult people to work with, then get out of the way. Let me show you what I can do.
Right.
They were trying to convince me it was going to be too hard. I was like, hard was J&J when I was in number 10 out of 10. That was hard. No, because there's a lot of patients that we can help. And so if you take a look at the mindset of selling, you got to have something that you wake up to in the morning that gets you excited to get out of bed. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be money. I can tell you that right now. Right. People will say it's money, but it's not going to be money. You can make a lot of money and go, I'm miserable. But when you have the opportunity to affect people, and I used to tell folks, DBS and ITB therapy is as close as having God touch somebody and heal them. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see it right there in front of you. How do you not get excited? I don't care what the difficulties are. Look at the patient and what you're able to help them with and change their life and the lives of their family members. You got to get passionate about like that.
Right.
And so that was seeing the patient and then being told that it was too difficult. Those were the two things that got me into DBS. And it's funny, when I did this, I actually told a lot of people, I'm going to apply. And then we go to training. There was almost like, I want to say there was like 15 other pain reps that were at the training class. And we were out one night all together talking. And somebody said, hey, how'd you, so somebody was talking like to Jerry White and said, how'd you get into this? And Jerry's like, Marcus called me. And he said, we need to get in this. And I started laughing. And then a few minutes later, somebody else said, well, I heard Marcus was getting into this. Yeah, I heard he was getting into it. I figure if he's getting into it, I got to get into it. It must be good. And about half of the people there were like, yeah, Marcus, you didn't call us, but we got into it because of you. I'm like, well, I'm glad you're here then. And so, but I told you there was a third piece that was interesting. And I think this is where sometimes, and I say this, I use this analogy, sometimes doors open and doors close.
Yeah.
And I think it was the time for that door for pain for me to close. And this door came open and I was passionate about it and I wanted to help people and I wanted to be in that business. But there was another reason I could never figure it out. A year later, after being in the business, I was working with all of these physicians. Neurologists, movement disorder neurologists, movement disorder neurosurgeons, interventional radiology, all these folks that touched the brain. Well, my son, my oldest son, about a year after I was in this business, we found out he had an AVM in his brain, an arterial venous malformation, and it was a big one. And those things are very dangerous. And all of the people that I worked with were now helping me. And I think that was one of the reasons for the door open, door closed. That door was open. I went through for the right reason for the patient, but I didn't realize there was another reason I needed to be there.
Wow.
And that was what I found out. And 5 years later, after multiple therapies, and he had gamma knife procedures, which so it's a different type of surgery, but they didn't ever cut his head open. But he had two gamma knife procedures and some embolizations done. And 5 years later, then the AVM was gone.
Wow.
But I honestly feel that was probably the biggest reason I was supposed to be there.
Yeah. And you had no idea at the time. But now your customers that you called on in that world were so heavily involved in your own son's care, medical care. And you also knew a whole lot about that world at that point.
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Jordan, that was also a good teaching moment later on, because when I would talk to the representatives that I was managing, or even when I talked to fellow district managers, I would tell them a story and I'd say, this is why when we commit to go sell something and we are doing the best we can for the patient and for the physician, this is the karma that could come back. So if you look at your job someday, you're like, man, I don't like doing this, or I shouldn't be here. Well, then fine, leave. But if you're struggling, think about that story, because you never know who that you're working with today might be helping your mother or your father,
sure,
or your cousin, or one of your close family, members like mine. You never know who's going to be doing that. So don't just do the job to do the job. Do the job, be the best at it.
Right.
So that you can be proud of your work, but you never know who you're going to impact, who might come around and impact you someday.
Wow. That's just absolutely incredible. I had no idea about that you guys had gone through that, and glad it came out the other side. And he's doing great today.
He's 33 years old. He's healthy. He's fine.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, you certainly tore it up in DBS as well. I mean, just, you replicated your success, top performer, district trainer, finishing number one, number three, number five in your time there, president's advisory board. If I were to pick out an element or a theme from your career and the success you've had, it seems like you almost didn't focus on personal success and your own achievement and wealth and things like that, but it was finding other motivators that were maybe on a higher level, like you said, about the patient, and then also embracing the challenge of something. Do you think I'm right about that?
I would say that, and I use the word experience again. When I was with Kraft Foods and when I was with J&J, it was about me. I wanted to be number one. And that, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with having the desire to be the best.
Sure.
If you do the right things to try to be the best. What I find interesting, though, is that all along while I was growing as a rep, the desire to be the best was there. But over time, my last couple of years, it came to where I enjoyed helping others to compete against me. And I was like, I'm going to show you what you need to do. But now, I'm telling you, I'm still going to be competing with you. I'm going to try to kick your butt. And I would tell people that.
Yeah.
And, but it was about winning. Okay. So it's, and I call it the me versus the we philosophy. So it was about me, but I was having a little bit more of a we philosophy. I'm willing to help the team. I'm willing to help others because it's good for the business, good for the patients, good for everybody. And healthy competition is always fun.
You know, right.
If you don't have a good competition, it's like, it's kind of boring. Where I noticed the difference is when I became a manager. When I went into management, I hung up my jersey. Some managers don't do that. They kind of bring the jersey out, put it back on, want to go play again. It's like, no, those days are gone. I hung up the jersey and I put on the coaching jacket, I guess, so to speak. And I focused on, I want to help my representatives or any representative to get better and have the experience of winning. I want to help them win and help them be the best. When the focus went from me to them, I had my best years, and I had more coaching wins than I ever had rep wins. And I thought it was interesting because maybe it seemed like I was more of a team player, and I think I was a team player, but I had a lot of me in me when I was a rep. I wanted to be on stage. I wanted to be the one that they said, this is the number one rep in the country. It never happened, but I wanted it to happen.
Right.
When I became a manager, I never thought about, hey, I want to be manager of the year. I want to win President's Cup. I didn't think anything like that. I wanted them to experience it. I wanted them to win. I wanted to do everything I could to train them, to grow them, to help them in any way possible so they were victorious. And in the process, we won as a team. I learned a lot from that. I learned that you need to have some me in you as a manager as well, because you want to be successful. You want your team to be successful, but you have to have a lot of we. That's all about them. And I just found it very interesting when I made it more about others, I had more success than when I made it about myself.
Yeah. You know, a lot of managers struggle making that transition from uber successful rep, because that's usually the ones that companies promote, into that leadership role. But you have to switch your brain, like you said, from me to we. Did you kind of naturally know that coming into that? It sounds like you were already working that way as a rep. You kind of already had begun to help others. So it may have been an easier transition for you. Or were there some mistakes you made as a manager along the way?
You know, I'd love to tell you it's all about, I knew all this, and I don't have that. I'm not smart enough to know all that. So along the way, when I was a rep, one year I won one President's Club as a rep. And after that year, after that night, I woke up and I'm like, I'm the same guy. I'd like to get better. And long story short, I end up getting a mentor outside of Medtronic. And I worked with this mentor for about 12 years. And I think that was when I look back, he helped me a lot, helped me grow, helped me look at things differently. And I think that's, if you want to have success, you have to be trained, but you have to continue your training. And sometimes you have to get training other places than what your company provides that you can help you grow and meet the needs that you have to where you can be successful. And so I think back, those are things that made a difference. And the way he worked with me and prepared me to be a leader, so the transition wasn't as hard when I went into management. Did I have difficulties? Yes. When it came to people, I had a pretty good outlook from that perspective. But when it came to the business, like strategy, like understanding run rates and understanding how to forecast, I struggled there. Mm-hmm. I struggled there. And I had to lean into people like Price Cleaver and others to help me. And our financial guys, they were the best.
They were good, weren't they?
Oh my gosh, they were good. Mm-hmm. And they probably gave me the most confidence of when the number was going in the different direction that I wanted to go. Yeah. And they were looking at our business as a whole. And I remember Brad Levine Yeah. I'll never forget one day he looked at me and he said, look, don't worry about the business. You're the way you're tracking, the way you're running, you'll make plan by January. And this was like August and I'd missed plan by a mile. And our team had missed it by a lot because they'd loaded they loaded at the end of the year like we all normally do. And sure. I didn't realize how impactful that was going to be from a manager perspective, from a rep perspective. You knew I could make that up. But yeah. From a big load, like, wow, how are we going to do this as a team? Well, he was like, don't worry about it. You're going to hit plan in January. I'll be darned. January rolled around and we were at plan. And so Alan Payne, Brad Lavina, yep. Those guys were my saviors.
Yeah.
They made a huge difference in helping me with my gaps because I had gaps as a manager. Mm-hmm. So I think when you look at managers today, you just like you analyze your people and you see these are the areas that they have strengths and these are their gaps. You have to analyze yourself.
Sure.
And you have to understand what your strengths are and what your gaps are. And can you delegate some of those gaps to others who can do a better job? Can you, what are you going to do with them? Some of them you might have to develop, but they might never become strengths. That's okay. My strategy, when it comes to strategy and strategic thinking, I'm good, but I'll never be great at it, but I'm okay. Hmm. But there's other areas where I'm really good at. And I kind of focus in that direction. And I have others, like I said, my buddy Price Cleaver, I think he's excellent when it comes to strategic thinking. I let him do that. If I need anything, I'll go ask his advice. So I think you have to understand as a manager, you talk about the we, you want your team to work together. You want your team to develop. Well, you got to mimic those behaviors that you want. And if you're not mimicking the behaviors of development and you're not reaching out where your gaps are and trying to develop them or at least have somebody help you, they're not going to do it either.
Right.
That was one of the things I would talk about in leadership. Mimic the behaviors you want as a leader.
Interesting. That's great. Great stuff. Tell us about Sales Performance Academy. You were in charge of that toward the tail end of your career. What was that? What were you involved with? What were you doing?
After being here about 25 years, and I had actually decided around the 25th year, I think I'd leave Medtronic. If I make it to 25 of Medtronic, I think I'm going to leave. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have the opportunity to take my experiences and go coach and lead others, maybe a smaller companies or a smaller company, and lead them to their Medtronic. And whatever it might be, whatever industry it is, business they strive to be in, let me see if I can coach others and get them there. That was kind of my goal. This opportunity came along with the RTG development. The leadership realized that they said this to me, we have a foundational gap in our training of our managers. And that crack is going to get bigger if we don't start doing some kind of developmental training for them. And so I had the opportunity to join four others. And we started with RTG and developing the managers. And we had some training programs that we had gotten from Covidian and through the merger and stuff. And so that's what we started with. After about 6 months, we realized these programs are good, but we're going to have to rewrite them and put our experiences in them. Mm-hmm. And it went from a Covidian type program to then a real Medtronic program. And two or three years into this, I would go to meetings or we would do facilitations and workshops, maybe on coaching or maybe on maybe new management development. People had just gotten the role for have been on here for a couple of months. And so we have a workshop. Managers come out of there and they're like, wow, this is stuff that I need to know. I've not been told, not been shown. This has been very helpful. When we did a coaching class, I remember one time I was talking to one of my partners and he goes, there's like four or five spine guys there. And I said, yeah, these guys are going to be there. And he goes, let me know what you think about that. That was Malik Nichols. He said, let me know what you think about it at the end of the course. So at the end of the course, I called him up and said, you know what? Those guys participated. It was fun to work with them. And three of them came up to me and said, I've been here 18 years. I've been here 21 years. I've been here. They did it separately. I've been here like 12 years, but they basically said the same thing. This was the best program I've ever been a part of.
Wow.
And Malik was shocked. And then to top it off, they called Malik and told him that. I'm like, see, I told you I wasn't lying.
I'd love to know, what were you doing that impacted these very experienced managers, you know, who'd seen it all, done it all, been through it all? What do you think was so different about that? What was the element of that?
When I came over to Sales Performance Academy, I thought presentation, doing a presentation, was the same thing as facilitation. And that starts with that. Presentation is where I get in front of you or a group of people and I go through the slide deck and I talk. Facilitation is where you throw up on a slide deck maybe some thoughts on leadership, thoughts on performance development, thoughts on, and you facilitate a conversation. What ends up happening is, do they get some pearls from the facilitator? Yes, they do. But the facilitator should be the last one who delivers any pearls. The pearls should come from within. And that's what made the program powerful, because we would facilitate conversations where managers would come together creatively. They weren't, I loved it when we had managers that weren't even in the same business. Right. When you had managers that were from different business units come together for a program, it was powerful. Mm-hmm. Because we would put them in groups, they would come together and creatively come up with solutions. Now, I will tell you what I found very interesting is when you gamify it. And if you're familiar with that term, gamify.
Oh, yeah.
For your listeners, gamification is you make it, you have a program, a workshop. However, when you put people in teams and they compete for points and prizes, you'll be very surprised how much more you get out of them. Because their competitive juices come and it starts flowing, and all of a sudden they want to participate.
Right.
I spent 25 years in sales and I hated role plays. I hated them with a passion. As a manager, I didn't like them. I didn't like them when I was, but they were important. I just didn't like it. I was never comfortable. Mm-hmm. And nothing changes, you know, 5 years into this, into the Sales Performance Academy, people really don't like role plays. When you gamify it, it was so interesting how managers who didn't want to get up and talk the first day had no problem doing role plays for points that would help their team maybe win this event at the end of the other program.
Yeah.
And so I found it very interesting what gamification can do if you do it right and if you facilitate it and kind of lead them in the direction they want to go.
Yeah, that's just great, Marcus. Well, you know what? Maybe one last thought, and you've been really generous with your time. I really appreciate that. But tell us what it was like to be the country manager of Puerto Rico. I never thought I'd see that pop up on your resume in my career. I didn't know that. I remember you telling me about it. And I just sat there like, this guy can do anything.
So I get a call from John Kowalski, who was the VP of sales at the time. And I actually got an email from his admin to be on a call in an hour. I was like, an hour? And he's going to be on the call. Well, when I got on the call, I knew he was going to be on the call. But then when I got on the call, I find out that head of HR is on the call, legal's on the call. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is supposed to be exciting. And he was talking to me about football. And everybody's like, they're going to fire me. I can't believe this. What happened? I thought this was supposed to be good news. And then he says, well, let's get down to business. We want you to be the country manager of Puerto Rico. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I have no desire to go to Puerto Rico. Never want to go to Puerto Rico. No. And that was going through my head. And he goes, I said, you want me to move to Puerto Rico? No. Don't want you to move. I want you to continue managing from Houston to New Orleans. Now, that's a $28 million business.
Right.
I've got like 20 reps. We want you to go to Puerto Rico about every 3 months. Go there for a couple of days, manage those folks, and then come back. Huh. I was like, no, I just in my head I was going no. And so I said, you know what, John, we're going to talk about finances. I said, before we talk about finances, I really need to do one thing. I need to talk to my wife. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you don't mind. Well, go talk to her and come back. I said, well, she's not here right now. So can I call you back in a couple hours? Yeah. But make it quick. I'm like, okay. So I go, Nancy happened to be in the next room. She was getting dressed. And I went in there for some sympathy. I said, you're not going to believe this. This call is about, they want me to be the country manager of Puerto Rico. They want me to go over and do this. They want me to do that. And she didn't ask me, how much they're going to pay you or anything like that. She looked at me. She sat there and listened. And then she said, I have been with you in San Antonio. I went from J&J to San Antonio with you and back from San Antonio to Houston with Medtronic. And I followed you around. I've done a lot of things for you. Puerto Rico is a place I've always wanted to go to. So get back on the phone and tell them you will be the country manager of Puerto Rico. I said, I'm not going to do that. I don't want the job. You go tell them you're going to be the country, or I'll call them. I said,
she knows how to advocate.
Like, you're kidding me. She says, no, I'm not joking. You make it happen. Okay. So I call them and I said, okay, I will take the job. But before I do this, I want to go to Puerto Rico. And I want to see what's going on.
Right.
And then I'll come back and I'll tell you what we need to do. Because I can't say I'm going to be there for 3 days every 3 months. Right. I can't tell you that. And he said, fair. So I go to Puerto Rico. JC, when I say it's bad. The physicians weren't using us. The business was run very differently. The language, the Puerto Rican language, my Spanish is okay, mm-hmm. but the dialect was so different in Puerto Rico. It was very hard for me to understand. And most of my reps didn't speak English. So, and I show up and they're like, who is this? But what I did realize after my 2 days of being there was I couldn't just go 3 days every 3 months. I had to be there once a month. And I had to be there for a whole week. And so I went back to John and all the people in charge. We sat down and we happened to be, everybody was at NANS. So we were in Vegas. So everybody was there.
Yep.
And I said, what do you think? I said, I'll do the job, but under these conditions. I go once a month. That's not in the budget. If you want me, that's what I'll do. I'm going to be there for a week. Well, I wasn't in the budget either. We're not going to argue these points.
Right.
You want me to go.
These are the requirements.
This is going to be the requirements because this is what the team needs. I'm not doing this for my health. I'm doing it for them. Yeah. If that's what you want, this is what you have. Well, Jordan, the team had not made plan in 7 years.
Oof.
7 years. By the end of the second year, we hit plan. And for a while, they had been making plan almost every year for, I want to say, 5 or 6 years after that.
Wow.
Puerto Rico, besides the language barriers and having to understand the business and then regaining the trust of the physicians, which they did not care for us. And there wasn't a lot of them. But when I left, the people who didn't like us, and they told me to my face how much they didn't like us.
Right.
The same physicians that told our president of Latin America, who came down to let them know that I wasn't going to be the manager anymore, because they demanded a meeting and they told them, if he tells us not to use Medtronic, we won't use him. But we're not happy about him leaving. But if he tells us to keep using, we'll keep using. But we want to tell you right now, we are not happy with him leaving. Puerto Rico was one of those doors that opened where most people would say, I'm not walking through it. I don't have time to do it. It was probably one of my greatest experiences with working with other people and helping them grow and helping them achieve their goals. But they also taught me a lot of stuff. And Puerto Rico is one of the prettiest countries, some of the best people, wonderful experience. I would say in the 31 years at Medtronic, it has to be my top two or three experiences that I'll never forget.
Wow.
Because it was a win-win on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
They got leadership training, they got development, but also I got developed too. I got leadership training too. I learned new skills too. Yeah. So it was a huge win-win for both parties.
That's great. Did your wife get to go?
Yeah. The first, I think two or three trips or four trips, I said, you can't go.
Yeah.
Because I've got to be focused. I'm going to have to be out at night. I've got to take the physicians out.
Right.
There's a lot of work we have to do. But about maybe 8 months into it, we had a big trip meeting and conference and all that. And we're staying in a very nice hotel where the conference was. I said, I think this is time. She's like, all right, let's go.
That's great.
So she went with me a couple of times and she really enjoyed it. Had a good time. I did have her work once though. I had that were upset with Medtronic and they were still griping. And I finally got them calmed down over a glass of wine. And we were starting to have a little bit of a decent time. And my wife was waiting on me to go to dinner. I'm like, no, this is perfect. She could come here. She could talk to them in Spanish. This will be great. So you want to come to Puerto Rico? Now you're going to do a little work. What? Yes. I need you to come meet these guys. And they loved her. That's great. And she was a big hit. And afterwards, they're like, we didn't know your wife was Hispanic. This is great. So from there on, I said, now you earned your way to Puerto Rico. You can do whatever you want after this.
That's such a great story. And a great note to end on. Marcus, thank you again for being on. This is fantastic. I know I'll hear from audience members about this one. I've had a few other friends of ours on in the past, like Bill Flanagan. And, you know, I always get great feedback from folks that really were the architects from a sales perspective of the neuromodulation business and pain and beyond pain into movement disorders too. And, you know, believe it or not, people that are new to the industry and new to this niche of the industry love hearing from you guys. It means a lot.
I mean, I know you had John McDonald, Bill. Those are some top-notch players right there.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Some of the best of the best.
Yep, absolutely.
George, it's been an honor. It really has been an honor. We've been friends for a long time. I know you've been asking me to do this, and I didn't want to do it. sorry it took me to retire to finally get on. I should have done this probably a couple of years ago, but it's been a really big honor to be here with you.
Well, it's been great having you, Marcus. Come back sometime, okay?
Anytime. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Chase MedSearch podcast. I hope that you gained some helpful insight from today's episode. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes and give us a like on your favorite streaming platform. It really helps grow our audience. For more information on Chase MedSearch, visit our website at chasemedsearch.com. Thanks again for joining us. Until next time, I'm Jordan Chase, and this has been the Chase MedSearch podcast.